Okay, so sometimes to break up the monotony, we do a cold opening here. This is one of those. Who am I trying to kid? Sometimes the software and various pieces of hardware don't freaking work. So we do a cold opening. It's been that kind of a day, really. Did you know that Skype crashed worldwide today? And has only just started working a little bit ago, apparently? Because I didn't. Well, I mean, I found out it a little bit before 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time today when we tried to get Dr. Bill going. And he didn't. And I thought maybe, because the odds of me putting the wrong password into Skype are, you know, astronomical. Astronomically unlikely, let's put it that way. And then when Dr. Bill said, you know, Skype is just sitting here and cycling and the little things going around and around. So that was going on until recently. And then the media player wouldn't work. It's a particular little piece of software. And what do you want to bet it works now? Nah, we're just grinding away. What the hell? So this is the cold opening for a brand new week of broadcasting. It is the 21st day of September, 2015. And yes, this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where we live. That's where you go if you want to jump into the chat room. I'd love to be there right now, but, you know, not cooperating. It's not that the chat room's not cooperating. Stuff here ain't cooperating. But you can be there as long as your computer cooperates with Java and Java cooperates with your computer. Jump right in and be part of the madcap merriment that is the real-time extravaganza, the Horn chat room. Oh, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And yes, even without the sound effects and the movie clip and the delightful music of the Calliope, golly, I hope Tim's listening. Hi, Tim. Even without that, it's still Moran Monday on the Horn. And by God, you know how you can tell it's Moran Monday on the Horn? Because we got lots of Morans. Really. Mm-hmm. It's also 9 minutes past the hour. We got about a 6 minute late start because of all of the aforesaid. But I'm here. Let the bells ring out and the banners fly. It's too good to be true. Feast your eyes on me. I'm here. And, of course, a reminder, and this is going to take a little bit of sorting out. We try to raise $200 every evening. And it was almost like some sort of Frank Capra movie miracle that what's happened over the weekend. Mm-hmm. Because you may recall with Friday's program, we closed deep in a hole. But all of a sudden, that began to go away. And so thank you. Thank you very kindly for making the hole go away. We had gone a long way. Look, the music player is going to start now. It reminds me of a little graphic I saw the other day. It showed the icons for the icon for Safari and the icon for Firefox and the icon for Navigator and the icon for Internet Explorer. And it said, "What are we?" And the first three said, "Browsers." And what do we want? Speed. Next panel said, "When do we want it?" And the three browsers, you know, Safari and Firefox and whatever, Navigator, said, "Now!" And the fourth panel showed the Internet Explorer icon going, "Browsers!" Yeah, exactly. I do want to send out thanks. From Friday forward, Thanks to Bill and Joan, and thanks to our dear friend Kelly, and thanks to Horst, and thank you to Jane, and thank you to Billable Rick, thank you to Fred, because all of these people got us out of the hole. Yes, indeed. And then, well, because we have some kind subscribers, well, thank you to Paul and Linda as well, and thank you to Joan again. Okay, so the fundraising part of this, here's the good news. Remember, program note, I'm not going to be here next week. All of next week. So, with that in mind, we're going to try to keep, well, a couple more days we're going to try to double up based on what we've already done. A couple more days we're going to try to double up on fundraising so as to head on out of the month in okay shape. So we would have been trying to raise $400 this evening, but we're not, because in large part of Linda and Paul and Joan. So thank you very, very kindly. We only have to raise $200 this evening. And here's the fun part. There is a challenge on the table, courtesy of Chris in Germany. The next $100 that come in get doubled. And we finish fundraising okay. And okay, and on schedule for ending the month, which seems to have just blown by with lightning speed. So if you would like to see your 5 become 10, your 10, 20, your 20, 40, et cetera, up to $100, then this would be a good evening to do that. Okay? So, wow, huh? Yeah. Thank you very kindly, Chris, for making these challenges and making it a lot more likely that we finish things where we ought to be. So it is, in fact, what are browsers? Yeah, it is, in fact, Monday on the horn. How do we know? Because of this. Oh, how about that? It loaded, but it won't run. Browsers! Hoo-wee. Okay, but anyway, that doesn't change the fact that it is Moran Monday on the horn. And, well, you know, Moran Monday is reserved for those particularly delightful, delightful exemplars of idiocy in the right wing. And it seems like they just pile up over the course of a weekend, doesn't it? Yes, I agree, Carol. Chris in Germany needs more cowbell. That was extraordinarily, it has been, extraordinarily generous. And a reminder, there is a premium on the table. I have described it in the past, if you would like to participate. Well, I have a show on me. We'll take care of that, and we'll get a movie poster out to you. Have a show on me is, of course, a $200 contribution. Have a program on me. For those purposes, we'll call it show. Sounds better. It's easier. And Agnes, because I almost hurt myself trying to figure out how to put the U.S. Postal Service mailing tubes together. Cardboard and I are not friends. But Agnes, Viking warrior princess, looked at me and said, here, dear, here, let me. She was very, very, very patient and made it clear that I didn't have any. So we're getting those put together. We've got four posters going out right now. And you could have one, too. It's just a matter of, let me know. Morans? Oh, we have Morans. And one particular Moran that we have, guess who is not a presidential candidate anymore? Or at least that was what was scheduled to happen at 6 p.m. Does anybody know? Has it been made official? News alerts were going out in advance of the 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time hour that Scott Walker, hero of the fine folks at the American Legislative Exchange Council, adopted son of Chuck and Dave Koch, is hanging up the hat that he threw into the ring because his presidential candidacy, which was once upon a time, he was thought, hey, you know, this could be the guy. I mean, if you know what, one of the people who said that was me. And unlike most people who work in this particular line, I don't have to be right all the time. Ladies and gentlemen, I can do this program with half my brain tied behind my back and every orifice in my body filled with an OxyContin tablet. And when I say something, you know you can go to the bank with it. I'm always right. Right? I mean, that was one of his slogans. Always right. Rush. Noon on WFUK. No. I'm really happy to be wrong about this. It ain't official yet. We're still waiting for it to get all official. But everybody's kind of waiting for Scott Walker to realize, well, for Scott Walker to start thinking about the rabbits. Because he's not going to be the president. His poll numbers are actually lower. I think his poll numbers are lower than zero. I mean, among other things, the tax lawyers over in the Chuck and Dave Tax Law Accounting Department are already writing off all the political contributions and charging them back against the tax commons of the United States. Thanks for your contribution to civic virtue, Chuck and Dave. Yeah, I know, Carol. Carol says, I just don't know which eye to look into when I offer my condolences to Scott Walker. Sorry, I shouldn't, but... I have, it's not really PTSD, but I have a flashback to the morning my father died every time I see Scott Walker. Because the guy who came to pick up my father's body at the hospice house had the same sort of thing going on in his face. It was the last bit of slapstick courtesy of my father, who loved him some slapstick comedy. Jenny, up in Fitzwalker Stan, says, yes, God told him not to run anymore. He's dropping out because he wants the Republican Party to get back to its roots and not to have the front runner win. I watched it, Jenny says. Damn it. Now he's going to go home and F more stuff up. He messed up Wisconsin in hopes of this. Arg. Yeah, so what? How much longer do you have to put up with him, Jenny? Because wasn't he elected last year or something? So you got two more years of him. Maybe re-impeach him this time, and maybe it'll stick. Or maybe re-recall him. Sparky tells me MSNBC is running his speech right now. poor Scott. Poor Scott Walker. Can you hear the grief in my voice? Because I can't. Because there's just not a hell of a lot of it. So it's winnowed by two now. Rick Perry, He and his smart glasses have gone back to Head Ranch in Texas. And Scott Walker is going to have to go back to Madison and make do with just screwing up one state instead of an entire nation. But that's okay, because we're going to have other morons to talk about, because morons is what we do bestest on Mondays. And there is another moron on the horizon. In fact, well above the horizon. Oh, this moron's star is rising rapidly as the for-profit media does what the for-profit media do best. Because that just sounded funny. It would have sounded funny, the for-profit media do what the for-profit. But yeah, that's the way, because it's plural. As the for-profit media do what the for-profit media do best, namely, completely miss stuff. There we all were, sitting there, watching the great chicken noodle news Republican pageant last Wednesday night, when she, Carly Farina, who had already been prophesied to be the next rising star on the Republican candidate stage, or on the Republican candidate midway, more like, probably. Oh, hell, what? Carol tells me there are no term limits in Wisconsin. Scott Walker could have the consolation prize of the Wisconsin governorship for as long as he, goggle-eyed homunculus that he is, thank you, Charlie Pierce, chooses to have it, thanks to Chuck and Dave. Oh, dear. And it is now official. Carol tells me, Scott Walker's encouraging the rest of the clown car to get out now to derail Trump. I know, it makes no sense. Everybody leave just Trump, the only one there, and that way we can derail Trump as the Republican nominee. Well, that let's do remember he couldn't quite handle that whole rigorous Jesuit educational experience there at Marquette University, so whatever, Scott, whatever. Oh, dear. But nonetheless, I don't know. I think things may change. I think things may be a change in Wisconsin. I'm told that the state Democratic Party up there has a new and much less go-along, get-along, hey, y'all, we're all Americans. I mean, that's the way it should work. You know, we've just got a polite disagreement about how things are supposed to work. But when the other side is the stump licker bunch, half mad out of their mind with fermented molasses leavings that they pulled out of a hollered stump, and with a little bit of with the addition of a little bit of yellow jacket venom in it. No, those people you have to go toe to toe with. And I'm told that the new Democratic Party leadership in Wisconsin may be a little more along the lines of somebody who understands that they're dealing with a bunch of people that have been drinking stump liquor through a straw, so watch this space. But Carly Farina sat there and tossed out a giant load of stink on Wednesday last. Which no one, and by no one I mean no one, there in the hangar of the Ronnie Reagan Memorial Library and Abattoir of American Freedom seemed to notice. I mean, there she was. I mean, she got downright snuffly, as we've noted in previous editions of the program, getting all worked up about that baby. That baby, that poor little fetus laying there, wriggling on the table, fully alive. As the Planned Parenthood butchers
auctioned its parts off and began to lop them off right there in the movie. And there was a guy, and he was wearing a goalie mask and had needles through his face. And, oh, the fetus, oh.
Remember? Well, no, you can't remember. I mean, you can remember her saying it, but you can't remember that moment in the dummied up, dodged up, faked up, ginned up, rubed up, frauded up, midwayed up, Planned Parenthood, Centers for Medical Making Stuff Up Association Organization Foundation videos, because even those clods, even those fraud merchants didn't gin up anything like that. That scene didn't exist. And so now, because she's a moron, a multimillionaire moron, but a moron just the same, Carly Farina is telling the world, you can't criticize what I said about the Planned Parenthood videos until you've watched the Planned Parenthood videos that I saw that don't exist. Yeah. Oh, this just in, breaking news. Carly Farina has announced a press conference after getting a private viewing of the Zapruder film. Carly says it shows JFK leaping from the car, disarming Oswald, and wrestling him to the ground. She sees lots of stuff in movies that the rest of us don't see. So there was that moment, and she's doubling down on it. Say, oh, it's really there. I swear I saw it. Oh, my God. You wouldn't trust this woman to be a witness in a simple red car, blue car, rear-ender auto wreck case in front of the circuit court of Spleen County, Arkansas. And Ms. Farina, what did you see?
Well, I was standing there on the corner, and the red car was sitting there, and the blue car was coming up, and all of a sudden, Godzilla picked them both up and smashed them together as if they were toys. And until you've seen what I saw.
Mm-hmm. Spleen County, Arkansas. That's out there near Duodenum, Arkansas. But she's on the rise because the for-profit media declared that she would be on the rise before the debates even took place, and CNN even dummied up the lineup to work her in there, and yet at the same time didn't throw Rand Paul and that thing on his head out. Because, well, he could be counted on to be a little bit of interest. Because, well, after all, somebody had to be there to take shots from T. Rump. And in a way, yeah, remember? I mean, he said he wouldn't have gone into Iraq and all that, and he wouldn't just tear up the Iran agreement. It contributed a little bit of a soupçon of sanity to the Republican Party that it otherwise does not have. So we got all that going on. But then there's the other stuff. Now, she's childless, and that's not an anti-feminist critique of her. I don't know why she chose not to have children, but she made it sound that night as if she had chosen not to have children because of a horrible, horrible accident in which she watched a child die. Well, it turns out that was a lie, too. This woman may well deserve to be the Republican frontrunner, because apparently she can't order a cup of coffee without lying.
I'd like a venti mocha latte, half calf, half soy, extra foam, caramel macchiato, cappuccino with four Splendas. And Iran wants to kill us all! Because I talked to Ayatollah Khomeini, who's dead, and he said he wants to... Death to America.
Yeah. That was overheard at the Starbucks on the Isles of Langerhans in the Arkansas River.
Well, so the horrible scene in which the precious little baby died, and she watched the precious little baby died that she went through last Wednesday night. I think the reason Skype crashed today was because people crashed Snopes trying to fact check Carly Farina, and it's been going on for days now. Because it turns out the precious little baby that she watched die. Was the daughter of her, do I have this right, the daughter of her brother-in-law, who was a 32-year-old drug addict, which is not in any way, shape, form, nor fashion to in any wise try to take anything away from such a horror. It's just that being a 32-year-old drug addict is a far cry from being a precious little baby who dies and apparently emerged from, you know, her womb or something, which she very artfully didn't make clear. But you know what it means? It means she studied at the foot of the masters. I can remember all the way through... all the way through the run-up to the Iraq War, when a whole bunch of us said, but wait! They keep saying that Saddam did 9/11, and he didn't. Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. And the other side responded, USA, 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 why you hate America? I got a feeling you probably remember that, too. Because it was kind of crazy-making. This woman's a pro. Straight up a pro. Because, and one last thing, because it's more in Monday. Remember how she, how they asked one freaking question in that pageant about working people? And it turned into a question about Carly the millionaire losing her millionaire job because if HP was an airplane, Hewlett Packard was an airplane, she pretty much augured it into the earth. You know, not just, but, yeah. But it turned out, you know, because she had... Well, guess what? She really did study at the feet of the masters. And the foot of the master. Mm-hmm. Remember how we tried to critique Dick Cheney back in 2000 for the fact that when he was running... God damn it. What was the name of that company? I've forgotten already. I've worked hard to forget this stuff. But remember how Dick Cheney's company got caught doing business with Iran when it was illegal to do business with Iran? Mm-hmm. And how, you communists, how dare you bring that up? Yeah. Halliburton, damn it. Halliburton. Yeah, Halliburton had been doing all kinds of business in Iran, and Dick knew about it and had no reason not to know about it, and even probably profited by it.
And yet at the same time, he's out there still running around having a conniption about Barack Obama selling us out to the Iranians. My heart is young. It is growing inside my chest. I'm going to live forever. Yeah, I remember that. And that's how, by the way, that's how he responds when anybody says, yeah, good morning, dick. Well, just a little update, something, something. Granted, she ruined the lives of countless thousands of employees by ditching them while she at the same time was helping herself to the great big smorgasbord that was the company treasury. Making herself richer than she had been before as the company did its corkscrew routine into the ground. I mean, that's not some joke. She bought, God, she ordered up jets and stuff like that. Did I read that stuff? Yeah. Well, it turns out, and you know, it's not just Dick Cheney. They were, after all, inside the hangar of the Reagan Library and Abattoir of Freedom when she was talking about, you know, her time at HP. And I think we would be unfair. That would be 28,000 people. 28,000 people she screwed right into the ground at HP. But she was standing there, and right. And it's not just Dick Cheney and Halliburton who did business with Iran. It was, of course, well, the great communicator. You remember Ronnie Reagan, the guy who at the tender age of, 38, 39, had his ingenue co-star Piper Laurie over to dinner at his swinging bachelor pad back in the 1950s. He'd just gotten done making a film with her. She was an 18-year-old virgin, and he cooked her hamburgers and then seduced her. Yeah, really, he fried hamburgers in a skillet in the kitchen instead of taking her at least to dinner, and then told her how much the condoms cost. Well, he was a fiscal conservative way back then. But no, that's not what this is about. He, too, did business illegally with the Iranians. Dick Cheney did business legally with the Iranians. So apparently there's a little bit of, I don't know, there's a je ne sais GOP thing. You can't be president unless you've flouted the laws of the United States and done business with the Iranians illegally. And Carly did, too. At one point in time, she was selling so much HP product to Iran, that the printer market in Iran was 50% HP. God, and they're probably still having to buy ink cartridges. What a great business model. At the time, there was an executive order in place under President Clinton, America's best Republican president. The SEC busted Carly Farina stone cold. And yet, somehow or another, she managed to evade the orange-suited perp walk with her hands conveniently behind her back. How could that possibly be? But it is. Mm-hmm. That Carly Farina. Now, how can she possibly survive this? She'll survive it. Because Republicans expect their candidates to talk about law and order, but to flout it whenever they feel it is necessary. Because that's what Republicans do. Mm-hmm. So, you know, watch. Watch this space, as they say. Because Trump's poll numbers are falling. And hers are rising, and this could, well, it's a circus. It's supposed to be interesting. About 17 minutes before the hour, and hey, I'm in the chat room. So we get to do that thing we do. Good evening to Chat Room Jesus, and Devin, and Earther, and Jugapunch, and Labor Man, and Tim from L.A., all capably moderated by inveterate, indefatigable chat room veteran moderator Sparky, who, though he is a third stage guild navigator, has not folded space.
I'm sorry.
Thanks, buddy.
I am so sorry. I thought I was going to ninja that. I was wrong.
Yeah, that's mainly because you are, what are we looking for here? Not a ninja.
No, I'm not graceful.
You're not graceful either.
China shop.
Thank you for dropping the pointy end of the scissors down onto the mix desk, son.
I love you.
I love you more. I think he and his mother are in there working on poster packing. That one of the glories of working from here in the mansion. No, Tim. Tim asks in the chat room, ninja? Ferg is Japanese? No, I think he would like to be. He is a devout player of Mortal Kombat. So some days he's Lin Kuei, and some days he's Shirai Ryu. And going all the way back to his early childhood, his hero and his invisible friend was actually the Mortal Kombat character Sub-Zero, who, because he was a little fella and wasn't speaking very well, not Sub-Zero, but Ferg, he simply named him Sub-Z. Yeah, it's a generational thing, Tim. I don't get, but yeah. Oh, who am I trying to kid? I love Mortal Kombat, too. Get over here! Never. Finish him. Oh, yeah, Earther, they're still making Mortal Kombat games. It's huge. Mortal Kombat X is out on the Xbox One. And it's also available on your mobile devices. It's just a magnificent time, Vampire. And lots of fun to be had. Yeah. But no, that's just the Carly Farina part of Moran Monday. And we have ever so much more of Moran Monday. Ever so much more. I'm proud to announce, among other things, that we've got the production machine up and running. It experienced an unexpected crash and needed to send some data back to Microsoft. I expect those humorless people in my driveway any minute now. Regarding Carly Farina, Jim sends a note. Carly, do not forget her private yacht being towed from sea to sea at Hewlett-Packard expense. Remember. I had forgotten that part. They really do think themselves a form of royalty, don't they? Tim notes, Carly Farina, Carly the F is a Californian. After hearing all this, why haven't you called our state California Stan yet? I'd like to hear your reasoning behind this. I thought Carly was originally, hold on here, now, daggummit. I thought she was originally from Texas and her maiden name was Sneed. She really does look much more like a Carly Sneed, doesn't she? There's a certain panache to being a Carly Farina. Carly Sneed? Carly Sneed is the kind of person who comes from near Duodenum in Spleen County, Arkansas. And has a lawyer named Daggett. Maybe I've got my unauthorized biography sideways, but but her husband, I guess maybe he's a Californian. Her husband Frank of 30 years, who in year 31 was apparently Epaminondas O'Shaughnessy. Yeah. God almighty, we've got... Well, I didn't know... Jack, I didn't know Sub-Zero was also a character from Arnold Schwarzenegger's The Running Man. I had no idea. So, you think they bogarted Sub-Zero into the Mortal Kombat universe? The latest Mortal Kombat's got all kinds of... Well, and I guess they were developed previous to this one, but... they have a Mexica god named Kotal Khan, who is actually probably a Mayan, but is really huge and buff. And I like the character because he will chop you to pieces with his macahuitl. You know, the great big paddle shaped sword that's embedded with little tiny razor sharp pieces of obsidian. Yeah. It'll also tear your heart out of your chest. The graphics are quite impressive. So, no, Carly's just the tip of the iceberg. We have really more stupid than we can handle. Here's a quick one. Just to sort of get us moving away from Carly Farina. It comes from Cumberland County, Maine, which is apparently the county whose county seat is Portland, Maine. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, even now, in Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, when you're charged with a crime, you still have a right to counsel. You still have a right to meet with your lawyer to discuss your zealous defense. And even in Maine, some of the lawyers are women's. Yes, they are. But they have a problem in Maine with the lawyers who are women's. Because the rain in Maine falls mainly on the underwire brassieres. No, really. If one is female and one has a client in the Cumberland County Jail in Maine, one will be asked to repair to the ladies' restroom before one goes through the metal detector and asked to remove one's brassiere if one is wet, and it's for national security. I know they don't talk like that up there in Portland, Maine, but we'll pretend that they do. Because it's really the attitude, isn't it? Yeah. Up there that's the problem. Female lawyers were going to visit their criminally charged clients in the Cumberland County Jail in Portland, Maine. And they were being told to remove their bras before they could meet with their clients. Better comedy writers than I will do ever so much more with this story than I. You could wonder, for instance, if there was a conspiracy between... No. And by the way, these aren't the full body X-ray scanners where you get a picture of a person without their clothes on. No. Mm-mm. These are just the framed metal detector and... Then the sheriff, the high sheriff, was complaining that the underwires in the ladies' underwired brassieres for ladies were causing the metal detector to go off. And his remedy was to ask all the women lawyers to remove their bras. Because higher order thinking, such as, let's get somebody in here who can fix this thing because it's obviously broken and shouldn't be getting set off by little parabolic pieces of thin metal that aren't guns. No, that one blew right past him. That wouldn't have been fiscally conservative. Mm-mm. What about the little wand metal detectors that they use at, you know, like clubs and stuff, and even in courthouses and whatnot? And they wave it around you. Nope, not that neither. The women lawyers have to go braless to interview their clients. This according to Cumberland County Sheriff Squeezy McFeelpants. Thank you, Arthur. The Squeezy McFeelpants just adds ever so much more to the conversation. The women were told, and this story comes from a real news source. Scott Dolan, a staff writer for the Portland Press-Herald, the women were told the policy was instituted because the bras have been setting off the jail's metal detector. Attorney Amy Fairfield, who learned about the policy only on September 10th when she went to meet with a client, said, "It's absolutely outrageous. Friday, or rather on September the 10th, which was a Thursday, she went to the Cumberland County Jail to meet with a client, and a sheriff's deputy told her she couldn't come in when her bra set off the metal detector, and Ms. Fairfield reports, he said, "Are you wearing an underwire bra? Might I suggest you go to the bathroom and take that off?" And Amy Fairfield said, "I will not. I am completely offended at that notion." Now, she did note that in previous visits to the jail, she's been asked to take off bracelets, rings, hair clips, but she's never been asked to take off her bra. Coming to a jail near you. Ms. Fairfield continued and said, "You know, they're just inviting a lawsuit. It's discriminatory, it's harassing, and it's a constitutional issue." And that's how it is with lawyers, see. Lawyers miss lots of forests because of all the damn trees. I mean, Ms. Fairfield is right. It is discriminatory. It is harassing. And it is a constitutional issue. But the larger issue here is it's also stupid.
"Hey, boss. Yeah, metal detector's going off on them underwires on the booby bras again. I reckon I'm going to ask them to take off their bras." "All right, boss.
Sounds good by me."
Again, instead of getting the damn thing fixed or using a wand in order to make sure that the said attorney isn't smuggling, I don't know, a thin, parabolically shaped, rat-tailed file in under her mammary glands. Now, meanwhile, that noble pleader, Attorney Matlock, has never been asked to remove his steel-plated truss. And the deputies don't seem to have any interest when the thing goes beep, beep, beep over Matlock's zipper. I mean, under these circumstances, maybe the lawyers would, the women who are lawyers there in Cumberland County, Maine, would welcome the full body scanner, because then at least Deputy Pervin Sleaze could see that it was a bra, and, you know, not a gun. God. Like I said, busy night. Jim seems to be in rare form this evening. "No underwires, utter destruction." Oh, and by the way, the folks over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda are terribly, terribly upset about the Emmys last night, which I confess I did not watch because I was watching football. Aaron Rodgers was pretty amazing last night. I think to me, there's no question but that Aaron Rodgers is the best quarterback in the NFL. I mean, you can have your Russell Wilsons and, yeah, Tom Brady, but I'm not giving anybody credit who thinks that Donald Trump would be a great president. I'm sorry. No. I don't care if Tom Brady is throwing footballs that are so flat they fly like goddamn Frisbees. I'll let that pass. But the T-Rump thing, uh-uh. No. That was a good game. And Dallas may be 2-0, but paying a terrible price for it, aren't they? Sorry, I'll stop now. Someday we'll talk about opera on the program, and I'll just turn it over to people who like opera. No, Fox News TV is very upset about the Emmys. Because, see, what happened at the Emmys last night was kind of historic. Yes, really. I mean, it was a big deal. A woman of color has never won Best Actor in a Dramatic Series. Until now. That's all changed. As of last night. In point of fact, and it wasn't just that. It was the fact that Andy Samberg, who hosted the Emmys last night, did a stand-up at the beginning of the program in which he, well, Republicans hate comedy because they're perfect. They're made perfectly for it. Andy Samberg went after and referred to T-Rump as a racist. Well, here, let's just, because it's pretty good. Let's check it out.
Hello, and welcome to the 67th Emmy Awards. I'm Andy Samberg. Justin Timberlake is not coming. Now that we've put that to bed, what an exciting event, you guys. The Emmys are all about celebrating the best of the year in television, so sorry, books, not tonight.
Suck it, books.
Loving this futuristic set we got here. I don't know. Yeah?
Skip a bit, brother.
Why not? Dagwood from Blondie. There were some changes in how certain shows are classified this year. For example, Orange is the New Black is now technically a drama, while Louie is now technically jazz. Of course, given our history being more diverse than ever isn't always saying that much. I mean, I bet on the day of Jackie Robinson's first game, the baseball commissioner was like, this year's Brooklyn Dodgers are more diverse than ever in history. You know, it's good. That's probably what he said. The wage gap between men and women hired for major roles in Hollywood is still an issue. Wait, I'm sorry, I misread that. The age gap between men and women hired for major roles in Hollywood is still an issue. Wait, I'm sorry, I misread it again. It's both, still both. So crappy on two fronts. Donald Trump, of course, is running for president, to the delight of uncles everywhere. But I've got to say, sure, Donald Trump seems racist. What else? Side note, is it just me or does Bernie Sanders always look like his flight is delayed? Guy's a mess. It was announced that Arnold Schwarzenegger is taking over as the host of The Apprentice. Weird that he's not hosting To Catch a Predator. I mean, he's got the experience. Guy kills so many predators. I guess he knows what he's doing. Paula Deen is on this season of Dancing with the Stars, but I gotta say, if I wanted to see an intolerant lady dance, I would have gone to one of Kim Davis's four weddings. It's so ironic that she came out of jail to Eye of the Tiger when you consider how many dudes have boned each other to that song. It's been a year of goodbyes. We said goodbye to Mad Men and Parks and Recreation. And, yeah.
So that's what they're mad about over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. Now, you did notice the dig at Bernie Sanders in there, right? And we all do agree, do we not, that Bernie Sanders is not a conservative Republican? I mean, we're all on the same page with that. Yeah. Always looks like his flight is delayed, guy's a mess. Okay, that's cutely quippy. Sure. And it, you know what? It's nothing to get upset about. If you're in politics in the new United States of Merca, the greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever, you're going to be in for some of that. Hell, Bernie probably giggled at that. But no, over there at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, they found their dudgeon, and it was high. Yeah. I personally thought the Paula Deen, you know, Sister Clark Kim Davis thing was kind of cute. It was funny. I would have. Oh dear. And you know why that's funny? Because it's not just the line. This is analysis of humor 101. It's not just the line. I would have, if I wanted to watch an intolerant woman dance, I would have gone to one of Kim Davis's four weddings. Because that's funny. And so the line works by itself. But it's what happens inside your brain, because then you have to visualize Kim Davis a-dancing. I heard Seinfeld once upon a time do this bit about understanding a joke, and it was about a plane that was going to crash. And there was a guy who was visually impaired, and he had his guide dog with him, and they were getting ready to jump out of the burning plane or whatever. And the punchline was, have you ever heard a dog scream? And it got changed, because it was funnier this way, to have you ever heard a German Shepherd scream? Because in our minds, we often, you know, we see a German Shepherd or maybe a Labrador Retriever. When we think of a guide dog for the blind, this is that, because you have to visualize Kim, or maybe you think about the fact that she's a holiness apostolic Pentecostal, sacred tabernacle of Jesus follower, and they don't dance, which is even funnier. I only offer that little digression into an analysis of humor because if they can get away with that, over at Fox News Radio, Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, if they can get away with analyzing humor, by God, I can too. I mean, just because you get paid $1 million a year to sit there, Andrea Tarantula, doesn't mean you're the only person who can figure out why funny is funny. But the problem is, over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, on one of those programs they have over there, the outnumbered program where there's four women and one guy, What Andy Samberg said wasn't funny at all. Damn it. Let's check in with, what's her name? Ebenezer Faulkner, Harris Faulkner, and Andrea Tarantula and the rest of the gang. You remember Andrea Tarantula, right? She's the one who said, Eric Holder runs the Department of Justice like the Black Panthers. That Andrea Tarantula.
A lot of people talking about last night's Emmy Awards, the winners, the losers, the jokes, and this year it appeared Hollywood could not resist taking a few swipes at Donald Trump and the rest of the GOP presidential field. Emmy winners Julia Louis-Dreyfus and Amy Schumer and a couple of other presenters all mocked the Republican candidates, and host Andy Samberg started things off during his monologue by taking on Trump.
I've got to say, sure, Donald Trump seems racist. What else?
What a great honor it must be for you to honor me tonight. Oh, no, I'm so sorry. Donald Trump said that. I'm sorry.
There is one category of television that allows us as a society to sit back and enjoy the simple spectacle of reality. A reality where a panel of millionaires fight like sharks to be chosen by average middle-class Americans. But enough about the Republican national debate.
To be fair, Samberg did take a shot at Democratic candidate Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, see, fair and balanced. Right? Yeah.
He spared his rival, though, Hillary Clinton.
Side note, is it just me or does Bernie Sanders always look like his flight is delayed?
Wait, what, huh? Mentioning Bernie's hair is giving Hillary a pass? What, they wanted, Zerubbabel Faulkner would have been, only would have been happy if they'd have trotted out that tired old joke about the Kentucky Fried Chicken, the Kentucky Fried Chicken Hillary special? Or why she doesn't wear miniskirts? I mean, Rush Limbaugh's been telling those for 20 years. I think it's a bit much to expect Andy Samberg just to lift material from a guy who's not funny in the first place.
Guy's a mess.
I mean, I laughed at that, but I'm not sure why it was funny. I think it just laughed because I'm a respondent to Laugh Track. But
I'm a respondent to Laugh Tracks? That was a laugh track? I thought that was a live, not studio, but auditorium audience laughing there. Listen, Josie Wales Faulkner. Let me try to get through to you here. You laughed at that because it was funny. You laughed at that because Bernie Sanders is apparently not much interested in his coiffure. That's why it's funny. Not because there was a laugh track. I mean, this wasn't MASH. It was funny. It's okay.
That was really interesting last night. It seems like Hollywood is doing something that even the RNC's chair, Reince Priebus, and others may not be doing.
What?
The establishment in recognizing the front runner, Donald Trump, who's been soaking up the airwaves.
That's what she got? That Donald Trump's the front runner? What part of Donald Trump is the front runner is the... I mean, I know there are people who actually get up. Marveline, it's time for Outnumbered. Let's get our insure and the swirly straws and get in here and watch that zany madcap program. I mean, yeah, sure. Bernie Sanders looks like a guy on the 28th day of Survivor. But he's not a bigot. You know, which Trump is. And you couldn't make the joke about millionaires vying like sharks for blah, blah, blah about the Democratic field because while Hillary is no doubt a millionaire, there aren't 19 of her. Humor. It's lost on them. I think they're all descended from that abbot in the Name of the Rose, who was afraid that laughter would destroy Christianity.
I actually thought that the so-called jokes were lame and not funny. Maybe it's just
that
me.
Yeah,
Judge. It's just you. It is just you. Because they were.
I thought they could have taken a lot stronger shots at everybody from Trump to Christie to Fiorina.
But when they mock you, do they love you, Chris?
No, they definitely
not this
do not
crowd.
Love them. And look, I mean, this isn't that surprising. Liberal people would make fun of the Republicans, and I honestly think anybody in a
because you know what, and this here's Kirsten Powers. You know what? There weren't no Republicans nor conservatives allowed into that auditorium. Mm-hmm. Because conservatives and Republicans are persecuted in Hollywood. Just ask a conservative Republican, and he or she will tell you, yes, absolutely persecuted. And so they were checking IDs and voter registrations, if you wore your Make America Great Again hat to the Emmys last night, you just didn't get in. Because Hollywood hates Republicans. Ooh, they're persecuted. I mean, yeah, every night they impale an oil covered Republican on one of those palm trees on what is it, the Rodeo Drive or Hollywood Boulevard or somewhere I've never been, and they just set them alight to watch them light up the evening. I mean, well, they can't now with the drought and everything, but they used to. Really, just ask Fox.
In a prime time, you know, show would also be talking about the Republican debate. Everyone's making fun of Donald Trump. That's not unusual. So I don't find anything remarkable about, and I agree, I don't think it was really that funny either. I think that there are much funnier things you could say about Donald Trump.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it's a compliment in a sense because it's been, I mean, the Republican race and debates have been some of the greatest.
Oh, wait, I'm about to screw up in a big way. Yes. Hockey puck. Hockey puck warning. Hockey puck. And the duct tape. Yes. Because we haven't gotten to the good part.
Shows on television lately.
Big ratings.
Big ratings. And the fact that Hollywood is sitting around and making jokes about this. I mean, when's the last time the Republicans, you know, fielded candidates that got this much attention and people were talking about and focused on?
2014, Kristen. No, you're not Kristen or Kirsten. You're not either one, and no, you're not Hezekiah either, or William Jennings Bryan Faulkner or whatever her name is. 2014 was the last time they got this much attention. Lord, we couldn't get enough of Michelle Bachmann or Rick Perry, or 999. Yeah, Herb Cain, yeah. Here's a little something from Jack you might find interesting. Article from 2015, but it goes back a number of years. And from the right wing, no less. This is from that news mucky site. Top 30 Hollywood Republican celebrities. Clint Eastwood. Shannon Daugherty, Robert Downey Jr., Melissa Joan Hart, Kelsey Grammer, Victoria Jackson. Wait, I don't think she gets to be on a list. Dennis Miller? No, not that's not Hollywood either. Rob Schneider? No. Patricia Heaton? Okay. Angie Harmon? Jerry Bruckheimer? Vince Vaughn? Tom Selleck? James Woods? John Voight? Gary Sinise? Bruce Willis? Adam Sandler? Chuck Norris? Really, Chuck Norris is on here? Yeah, it does go back a ways, Jack. Robert Duvall, Gene Simmons. Gene Simmons is Hollywood? I didn't know. Dwayne The Rock Johnson. LL Cool J? Schwarzenegger. Stallone. Pat Boone's all the way up at 28. James Caan, Susan Lucci, who cares? But see, there's right-wingers in Hollywood. Oh, but let's continue on, because this is just too much of a delight.
This early in the race, I mean, in a way, it's a commentary on how successful they all are, that they're out there and they're interesting and you're talking about them and they're joking about them. I, by the way, did not watch a minute of that program last night. The Emmys, well, you know, I have been watching the debate, so I don't,
But it's also a commentary on how bad humor has gotten.
Wait a minute. There was a debate last night and I missed it? I mean, I know I missed the Emmys because I was watching, you know, the Seahawks and Packers. Oh, but wait. Here's what we've been waiting for. Andrea Tarantula, humor specialist. This is why you got the hockey puck out.
Night. The Emmys, well, you know, I have been watching the debate, so I don't,
But it's also a commentary on how bad humor has gotten. I mean, I really didn't think that Sandberg was that funny. I agree with you, Judge. I was.
I wonder if she's ever watched an old Richard Pryor stand up, or maybe God knows she's never even heard of Lenny Bruce. George Carlin, forget it. It just goes to show you how bad humor's gotten. Nah. Why couldn't they stand up there and do good, upstanding, God fearing, Bible believing Christian knock knock jokes?
Exactly slapping my knee last night, and I decided after I saw what they were wearing to
And neither was anybody else, Andrea, just saying,
to watch a different Emmy winner. Her name was Harris Faulkner. So I switched the channel to the woman who's got all the Emmys in her office, by the way, and I was watching my girl on the Fox Report last night, who, by the way, was funnier and did a way better job and was better dressed than any of those people on that stage.
I love this one.
Oh, the love that dare not speak its name. I'll take that back, Bob. Okay, I take it back.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's true. I was texting you during the show. I'm like, you look hot. I like your dress.
That check will clear.
It's more fun.
Okay. It will clear.
What a happy couch this is.
I know. We're happy here because you're here,
we
too.
We are happy.
It's a delight.
Yeah, you're it's a happy
sweet.
Place, this outnumbered.
Thank
so,
you.
So, yeah, I mean, I just, again, I don't know that the front-runner status of Donald Trump has gotten the kind of, I mean, look at the Democrats and Hillary Clinton and the difference between their treatment and the treatment of the mainstream Republicans and Donald Trump. I mean, am I missing something?
It'd be so much funnier if they criticized the liberals, too.
Did you get that? Yeah, I know. You bit down on the hockey puck. Because they played it, we played it. You heard the Bernie Sanders jab. It would be so much funnier if they criticized the liberals too. Well, they did the Bernie joke. What does Andrea Tarantula want, Moran? That she is. Does she want a Bernie is a racist joke? Cause see, that wouldn't be funny because it doesn't humor, political humor especially. Begins with a reference to some fact or allegation of fact or some perception of truth. Like, well, I mean, let's say you go around saying that Mexicans are rapists or that there's a bunch of black guys counting your money and you don't feel good because the only people you want counting your money are Jews in little beanies. You can work with that because it's factual, because those are things that actually came out of, you know, T-Rump's face, such as it is. Or maybe she wanted a joke about how Hillary Clinton can't dance, or Hillary Clinton is intolerant. But see, Hillary Clinton, to the best of my knowledge, well, I mean, except back when she and Bill were declaring that marriage was something sacred between one man and one woman, or that people needed to don't ask, don't tell in the military. I mean, but that's not intolerance. That's just being wrong. They weren't, well, but you get the idea.
So predictable that they're going to go after the Republicans. If they had real courage and they were really raw, courageous comedians and entertainers, like they say, we're so courageous by making statements about this and that, they would actually have the guts to criticize the liberals too.
But you, for what, Andrea? I mean, please. All right, okay, let's see. Knock, knock. Who's there? Upstanding Bible-believing Christian Kim Davis. Upstanding Bible-believing Christian Kim Davis who? Jesus Christ, do I have to be introduced by Mike Huckabee? That's the laugh track. Yeesh. This is the Moran Monday that wouldn't leave. So there's this former hedge fund manager. No, wait. So this former hedge fund manager walks into a pharmaceutical company. Yeah, that doesn't work for me as the setup to a joke, and a lot of people aren't laughing. Because this is real. You want a perfect snapshot of capitalism? I got it. There's a guy named Martin Shkreli, 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 and he made himself a pile of money as a hedge fund manager. And then he turned around and created something he calls Turning Pharmaceuticals. And having created it, he is, of course, the CEO of it. And he bought himself a drug. Called Daraprim. Daraprim is an antiparasitic, and it is most often used as for the treatment of infants, you know, that the Republicans, oh, no, these are infants who've already been born, never mind, the Republicans don't love them. The treatment of infants and people suffering from HIV. Well, he bought this drug, and the drug costs less than a dollar a pill to produce. And it was sold on the for-profit healthcare market, the for-profit healthcare pharmaceutical market, for $13.50. Mm-hmm. Well, once he got his capitalist hands on it, Turning Pharmaceutical CEO Martin Shkreli, I swear it sounds like something you put cream on, and I don't mean like strawberries, I mean like, you know, some sort of god-awful rash that's eating your index toe. Shkreli. And he raised the price from $13.50 to $750. I do not have the Cifron and Gazetta skills to even begin to calculate what percentage of a markup that is. All of this comes from a CNBC interview, because see, and by the way, Martin Shkreli looks like he maybe stopped wearing, well, this isn't really, really old, early 20th century reference. He looks like he got out of short pants about a day and a half ago. I mean, this is a kid. So over on CNBC, he's got a program. There's a program, not he has, but there's a program called Power Lunch. And he was interviewed on this. I hope you didn't put the hockey puck away. Really and for true.
Now from the NASDAQ, he's the CEO of Turin Pharmaceuticals. Martin, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you guys have said that the reason you increased this price so much after acquiring the drug was in order to do the research and development to develop a better version of Daraprim. I just got off the phone with an HIV doctor who told me they don't need a better version of this drug. What are you doing here?
Yeah, that's not true. There's a recent paper that suggests that two patients died due to autoimmune encephalitis from toxoplasmosis. So there's a lot of people who die of toxoplasmosis every year, that and this field desperately needs new ways to treat toxoplasmosis. For instance, the current drugs right now target the folate receptor of the bug. There's no other way to kill toxoplasmosis as of right now. So we're working hard on trying to find new ways to do that.
So what a lot of companies do is raise venture capital funding when they see an important market for a drug, rather than raising the price on the current patients who need it to survive and who have no other choice but to take it and pay the higher price. Why wouldn't you go that route?
Well, we did raise one of the largest Series A financings in history for a biotech company. We raised over $90 million. And we also feel that this is the more appropriate price for Daraprim.
Oh, by the way, they did the over at CNBC, they did the Cyphron and the Gazetas for me. It's a 5,000% drug price increase. And by the way, just there's a misprint, and I've gone back and forth because I've seen it both ways all day long as I was doing my reading, and I landed on Turning Pharmaceuticals because I didn't think the goddess of irony could be quite that vicious, but she is, and we should know that by now. He actually named his company Turing, T-U-R-I-N-G, Pharmaceuticals. And Turing Pharmaceuticals now owns this particular drug. And he named it after the persecuted British hero who happened to be gay, who, after saving Britain from the Nazis, I mean, he really kind of did, Britain then hounded to his death. And now he's marketing a drug that's used often in HIV treatment. Whew. I hope the goddess of irony continues to watch Mr. Shkreli. Anyway, continue.
Price Daraprim is still actually on the low end of what orphan drugs cost, and we're certainly not the first company to raise drug prices.
So Hillary Clinton comes out today citing the story about you guys in the New York Times, causing quite a stir in the biotech industry. Did you not expect a 5,000% price increase would result in that kind of attention?
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, it really depends on how focused people want to be on the industry. You know, at the end of the day, there have been much larger drug pricing by much bigger drug companies that actually, you would argue, large multi-billion dollar companies with lots of cash don't necessarily need to do something like this. Turing is a very small company. It's a new company, and we're not a profitable company. So for us to try to exist and maintain a profit, I think is pretty reasonable.
Most biotech companies don't actually maintain a profit for decades until they get drugs onto the market. Why are you guys different?
Well, I think of
it. Wait. Hold on there. They raised $90 million, but they're still not a profitable company. Where's the 90, Martin Shkreli? Hmm? Yeah? Is it in your Maybach? I mean, $90 million and you call yourself not profitable. And because it's an orphan drug, he gets to raise the price to whatever he feels like he wants. I guess this is the hedge fund equivalent of back when Paul and John would each other and say, let's write a swimming pool. Let's write a Rolls Royce.
This is a pharmaceutical company, not necessarily a biotechnology company, and I think that distinction is not exactly clear either way, but I think profits are a great thing to sustain your corporate existence.
Martin, you had mentioned that you are a small company and you're going to use the price increase, the difference, to do R&D to find a better cure for toxoplasmosis. What kind of R&D staff do you have? What amount of money do you plan on devoting?
Oh, we don't. We're just going to find another drug and buy it and raise its price by 5,000%.
Devoting to research and development.
Sure. So we have about 25 people in R&D. We have open positions for another 25. We do medicinal chemistry, in vivo and vitro pharmacology. I help the team out quite a bit.
He helps the team out. Yeah. Go team! Yay, team! He helps the team out quite a bit, and that justifies the biggest part of that $90 million going into his pocket. I mean, how much? So they got 25 in R&D, and they got room for 25 more. How much are they going to pay them? $100,000 a year? Let's use a nice round number. 25 at $100,000, that's $2.5 million. Another 25 at $100,000, that's $5 million. Let's say we're going to pay them $200,000. We're up to $10 million. There's still $80 million to be accounted for. No. Remember, he helps the team out quite a lot. Maybe $80 million worth.
So I'm really excited to develop new drugs for toxoplasmosis. We're going to contribute the majority of our revenue to doing that.
Contribute the majority of the revenue, and they're not profitable, but they're going to contribute it to doing it. You know, like, it's a gift. It's a contribution. It's not capital investment. It's a contribution, because see, he's a charity who raised the drug price that costs a dollar to make to $750. Wow, that almost seems like a 700. Well, don't trust me, numbers, forget it.
In essence, we're taking the revenue from Daraprim and trying to come up with a better, safer, more effective version of it.
Okay. And you were a hedge fund manager before.
Yes.
You probably could have guessed, as Meg had mentioned, that this is going to cause a stir. And we actually saw the IBB, the Biotech Index ETF, go down about 5% on Hillary's tweet. Did you anticipate that would happen? Are you in any way invested in biotech through a short, either personally or through another fund?
I have a small portfolio, but I don't really watch the stock market on a day-to-day basis.
So does that mean that do you have any position in biotech stocks? Are you
very,
short
very,
any?
Very
are you
small
short
amount.
Any of them?
Yeah, I'm short a few biotech stocks, but I'm also long a few biotech stocks, and I don't have a specific net short interest in biotech or anything.
Martin, I got to ask you, doctors have come out saying that you guys need to revise your pricing strategy because patients can't get access to these drugs.
Patients can't get access to the drugs? What the hell does patients have to do with it? Screw them! Right? Because capitalism. You know all that business there about are you long on, are you short on? As Marty points out, Shkreli also lobbied the Food and Drug Administration to halt and or delay approval on drugs from pharmaceutical companies that in that little bitty portfolio that he mentioned that he just happened to have shorted. Huh? Nice? Yeah. Because freedom.
But said they're trying to hoard it in order to provide it. Do you feel badly about what's happening?
No, in fact, we're increasing access to patients, Meg. I think that,
he is. They're increasing access to patients. Because, see, when patients can't afford to pay $750 for his $13.50 drug, they die. And then more patients can come in and have access to his drug that they can't afford, and they die. And, see, that way you get more patients. They're just dead.
Dramatically increasing the access to Daraprim, lowering copays, giving more drug away for free. Half of the drug we give away is for $1, so I'm not sure what you're talking about.
You know, Martin, when you bought the company, this was a $1 pill before Core Labs bought it. Then it went to $13.50. Now you bought it. Now it goes to over $700. Would you have bought, when you bought this company, did you buy it because you knew that you could raise the price?
We definitely planned on raising the price, that's for sure. We paid a very, very large amount to buy an unprofitable medicine. We can't continue to make to lose money on the drug at that price. So
in other words, he made a stupid business decision. He paid a large amount of money to buy an orphan drug that wasn't profitable. I've seen this movie before. In fact, I'm paying for this movie right now. Here in almost level West by Cole, Virginia, Stan, we've seen our electricity bills go up. Granted, not quite on this level, but still. Because back when coal was selling for googly-moogly dollars per ton, the geniuses at Appalachian Power bought, I mean, they went long on it. Oh, they bought hard. Because then they figured they'd turn around and turn it into electricity and, you know, choke a few people to death in the process. But what the hell? Got to break eggs, right? Yeah, omelets, coal dust. And then they turn, and everybody would want to buy their really expensive electricity. Only then we had some mild winters and nobody did. So they turned around and said, hey, we made a really stupid business decision and we want to keep making horse gagging loads of money on our salaries as executives of Appalachian Power. So, please, Public Service Commission, will you allow us to stick it to the ratepayers? You know, the moms and dads, the folks on fixed incomes and Social Security and poor people working minimum wage jobs and stuff like that. Can we stick it to them so we can keep getting richer? And the Public Service Commission said, well, heck yeah! Because, see, that's how capitalism works. Because capitalism is great. Yeah, by the way, a little bit on that, a little something on that R&D business. Roger points out, all R&D costs are reimbursed. The biggest lie is that there is any R&D cost at all. Our tax laws reimburse 100% of research and development as tax credits. And guess what? Half of those pills that they give away at a dollar a piece because it's a dollar to produce? What do you want to bet some crafty-ass tax lawyers there going, yeah, we gave it away at a dollar a piece, but we're going to claim a tax credit of $750 a pill. Kill.
We took it to a price where we can make a comfortable profit, but not any kind of ridiculous profit. They're much larger.
He's Daffy. And we thought Rand Paul was Daffy Duck. I'm rich. I'm comfortably well off. I'm socially secure. I mean, we took it to a place where we could make a comfortable profit, but not a ridiculous profit. I mean, because we had a show of hands, and I was the only one showing hands, and I asked, who here thinks 5,000% markup on a drug that costs $13.50 and costs a dollar to produce? Who here thinks that's a ridiculous profit? No hands. Who thinks that's a comfortable profit? Oh, I see a hand! Ron in Raleigh points out, you know, when the revolution comes, punk asses like this will be the first against the wall. And I want to be the one to hand him his blindfold. Okay, then I get to be the one who lights his cigarette. No, what? A cigarette? These things will kill you.
But Europe, I assume you are a free markets gentleman, are you not?
Sure.
Okay, so why do you think the drug was priced at $13.50 before? Somebody thought that was the right price for this drug.
Markets aren't that rational.
The market said 13.5 worked.
Yeah, if you look at drugs like Sovaldi, for instance, Daraprim is less expensive than Sovaldi, despite the fact that it treats a disease that's far more severe and far less common. So if you think about free markets and fair price, it's pretty clear that Daraprim was not priced appropriately.
Does Daraprim actually cure toxoplasmosis?
It does.
It does, okay.
It does. It eliminates
infection. So
there's
a finite end, just like for the hepatitis C drug.
It's, in fact, a very short treatment administration, which makes it even less expensive than most orphan drugs, which you have to take for years and years and years. Can you imagine taking a drug that costs $500,000 for the rest of your life every single year? By comparison, a cure treatment of Daraprim is about $50,000. That's about half the price of Hep C cure regimens right now.
Well, okay, I mean, as long as that's the case. Ron, up in Canada, adds, I have a very small portfolio in biotech. I have a few that I've shorted and a few that I'm long on. Two fews add up to several, in my view. I would invoke the old Arab curse that his crotch be infested with the fleas from 1,000 camels and may his arms be too short to scratch. Oh, this is one of those people, because, see, I'm weird. I do this all the time. I see various and sundry people And Agnes hates it when I do this because quite often she'll start sniffling. She tries to put forward this very, very stern exterior, but it's a crunchy outer shell with a soft marshmallow center. And I'll go, you know, look at that person. That was somebody's precious baby once. I look at a Martin Shkreli and I think, nah, nobody ever loved him. He was a nasty, conniving, finagling little screw from the moment that he twisted his way out of his mother's womb. Ugh. Marty says, forget putting him against the wall. Dr. Guillotine's invention awaits this guy. He needs a good POV of the blade. But look, you can't hold it entirely against Martin Shkreli. Damn, Shkreli's acting up again. You can't. Because all he is doing is participating in capitalism. This is capitalism. You don't want to die? Well, okay. Give me $1,350. Maybe you won't die. I don't give a damn that it only used to cost $1,350. If you want to live, you pay me now. Because that's freedom. And that's America. The greatest country in the world on earth now, today, forever. He owes no duty to the body politic. He owes no duty, no obligation to the country that secures his ability to make outrageous amounts of wealth. Who the hell do we think we are? And yeah, Ron, I'm right with you on that, Ron, in Canada again. Because I was at, why would you even agree to go on the program? And by the way, credit where credit's due, Hillary is the one who called this creep out. Ron in Canada says, I still don't know why this sucker even agreed to be interviewed. In my direct experience, the smartest criminals never do anything to attract attention to themselves. One can only observe that narcissism seems to be increasingly prevalent. Yeah, this is like the serial killer who sends notes, you know, the stalker guy who sends notes with little cut-out pasted letters on it. Either to the newspaper or to the next victim. Why shouldn't he appear on CNBC or anybody else that wants to talk to him? He's only doing this because we have a country that says he can. And we don't just, here in Merca, we don't just say he can, we say he should. We say that he's a job creator. Didn't you hear that? He's got 25 more spaces to fill in R&D. This is, I mean, we are shocked, we are outraged, we are disgusted, but at the same time, we have an obligation, I think, to acknowledge that he's only playing the game by the rules thereof. Earther pointing out, by the way, Bob, as you know, state universities do a lot of research that the drug companies buy for cheap, and drug companies spend more on ads than they do on R&D. Ding, 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 ding. This is your for-profit healthcare system at work. Who was it? It was the CEO of Bayer a couple of years back, wasn't it? Who said, oh, we're going to be developing drugs that'll cure cancer. And they're going to be awesome cancer curing drugs. And I mean, we're going to be developing these drugs for people who can pay, not like, you know, Indians and stuff. I mean, he said that. Eh. And let's wrap it up with this clown.
Taking a drug that costs $500,000 for the rest of your life every single year. For, by comparison, a cure treatment of Daraprim is about $50,000. That's about half the price of Hep C cure regimens right now.
Martin, we do appreciate you coming. I got to ask you one more question. You know, in response to all of this attention and doctors and patient groups saying they can't access this drug, are you going to change the price?
No.
Fuck them. Let them die. Let them all die. Till somebody comes along that'll pay my price. I have a right to this. Because Merca. Because capitalism. Because privilege. Because Shkreli. Skiing accident. Skiing accident. Skiing accident. Skiing accident. I mean, it's guys like this that'll almost make you religious. Because he's so vile. So unutterably contemptuous of everyone who isn't Martin Shkreli. That you just wish there was a deity out there that would tweet right on the end of his precious little nose. And suddenly let him see the world from the other side. I'm sorry, Marty, you can't afford the drug. What the fuck do you mean? I'm Martin Shkreli! Told you it was going to be a busy Monday. The question is, with Martin Shkreli, how do we alleviate this? There you go, Devin. There you go. Imprecatory prayer. Let his days not be long upon the earth. Let his wife become a widow, and let his children be orphans. That's right there in the Holy Bible. You betcha. But of course, this is just one example. I mean, I've been paying attention to a story that's been developing for a while now. Because I've talked, I mean, it's not a secret. I've talked about it on the air. I am what is called a cholesterol factory, and I can if capitalist America could develop a need for triglycerides, They would probably come and kidnap me in the middle of the night and just sit around feeding me sugar and keeping me alive, watching me crank out triglycerides. Because I can do it with real aplomb. Unfortunately, it's not very good for people. It leads to, you know, stuff like heart disease. And lo and behold, it turns out, through the miracles of modern science, and when I say miracles of modern science, I'm not being wry or ironic or facetious. Science is fascinating, and the things we're learning are amazing. The problem is, we have an economic system that says that the only reason we're interested in learning any of that stuff is that so some guy who isn't a scientist can, you know, get rich. You know, Martin Shkreli. Just saying, $90 million, okay, $90 million is a kind of lowish Powerball jackpot, but it ain't chump change. And so, this guy's going to get incredibly wealthy, and even, and as Carly Farina proves, even if he goes bust, he's still not going to get knocked down to beanie weenies. That's for us. You know, the proles. But anyway, back to triglycerides. So, through the miracle of modern science, we have found out that there is a genetic thing that happens in some people where they just have out of control cholesterol because a gene is the bubble off plum. And working within that model, I mean, there are people who have it far worse than me by a long shot. They have to go in every 2 weeks. It's like dialysis, only not. They have to get all their blood pumped out and their and all the triglycerides and fats taken out of it, and then they get their blood pumped back in. And it's a really miserable experience, except for the alternative, which is, you know, dead. So, a couple of companies have developed an injectable drug. And after a whole host of clinical trials, it was discovered that one of these particular injectable drugs, which does more than any statin, any other cholesterol drug, I mean, it just wham, your cholesterol's down. And it has side effects that are co-equal with a placebo. It could conceivably save the lives of countless thousands, if not millions, of Americans, let alone the rest of the world, every year from needless premature death. No, you know, because, of course, nobody gets saved from death. No one here gets out alive. And that's creditable, I think, first to Hank Williams and then to Jim Morrison. But it's the premature part. It's the daddy who wants to see his kids grow up, the mommy who wants to become a grandmother and do all those grandmotherly, lovely, wonderful things that make children feel like life is special and good. It's them dying that it prevents. And the drugs are brand new. And they are, the drug is $12,000, I think, per year. Yes, indeed, I agree, Devin. Death is a sexually transmitted disease. The drug is $12,000 a year. And there ain't an insurance company on earth that will cover it. So in short, this miracle drug that has the potential to save the lives of millions of people is only going to save the lives of those who are rich enough to be able to afford it. Because, see, at $12,000 a year, that's not one of those choices where you can say, well, you know, we'll quit eating hamburger and we'll just eat beans. And so somehow or another you scrounge $12,000 out of the family poverty level budget for the year. No. If it turns out that, say, Chelsea Clinton's husband has a cholesterol problem, it will be no problem. He'll just go and get the shot and write the check. If some member of the T-Rump clan needs it, they'll have it delivered by a goddamn Learjet. Transferred to a helicopter and land that on top of one of the goddamn buildings. And have a liveried servant bring it down administer it with a solid gold syringe. Because that is how capitalism works. And just as Roger pointed out, and just as Earther pointed out, the vast majority of the costs of developing that particular drug get recouped on the tax form. It comes back. Because the Congress has determined that there is a net social good to be had in making sure that millionaires, the one percenters, who have a cholesterol problem, don't die prematurely from it. On the other hand, if you're the guy down in the pit over at the Jiffy Lube, well, you can die. Because there's another guy waiting to become the pit guy at the Jiffy Lube. And the funny thing is, the really, really sick and twisted punchline to this joke is that this is deemed to be the best economic model of which the mind of humanity has been capable of conceiving. You're not laughing. Oddly enough, neither am I. And this could be corrected. It does not have to be this way. But that would require responsible governance. And that would require a body politic that is not engaged, and particularly a working class that is not largely engaged in self-loathing. Because see, for everybody except someone whose loved one is dying for want of one of these drugs, if you look at a whole bunch of the lumpen proletariat and say, well, hell, we can fix this. It doesn't have to be this way. Everybody can have access to this drug. Well, 35 years worth of social conditioning that started in large part with the presidency of Ronald Reagan, has conditioned the bubbas to say, oh, that's communism. Meanwhile, the one bubba over there who's holding the hand of somebody who's on the way out the goddamn door looks up and says, wait a minute, I'd like to have a little more time with my daddy. Or with mama. Or with sissy. But one broken-hearted prole will not change a government. And there will be plenty of self-loathing working class who will be willing to look at him if he dares to say anything in public or maybe at church or something. They'll say, yeah, but that would destroy the greatest economic system in the world, and then where would we be? And because he's outnumbered, he won't say, tell you where I'd be. I'd still have my mama. Capitalism. Because freedom. So I have managed somehow or another to filibobster for 2 freaking hours because, like I told you, we had a wealth of morons this evening. Robert in Australia says, I'm so happy to live at the arse end of the world. Sorry to bore everyone to tears once again. I inject myself under the skin, none of that into the vein business, with a drug called Humira. As a result, I am largely mobile, even though I have crippling arthritis. The drug costs $1,000 per injection. I take one every 2 weeks. So that's about $26,000 a year. I pay a couple of dollars thanks to the PBS, and that's Pharmaceutical Benefits Scheme, subsidized medicine in accordance with Section 90 of the National Health Act of 1953. Except, I've gone over my copay limit for the year, so currently my copay is zero for all my meds. Arse end of the world? That's a comment made by Prime Minister Paul Keating many years ago, one of our more foul-mouthed prime ministers. And I'm very happy to live on the world's arse. Well, indeed, Robert, indeed. And frankly, you've got a lot of the same genetic stock up over there than we have down under here. You know, your Scots, Irish, cholesterol factories. And I imagine in fairly short order, that magnificent cholesterol-lowering drug that works like gangbusters and doesn't roast your liver will be available to people down there who need it. Meanwhile, people here who need it, well, they'll stick their hands out for their loved ones to hold as they exit the space. Because this is America. No reverb. The greatest country in the world. If you're rich. Like I said, I've filibustered for 2 hours. We have a $100 challenge on the table this evening, courtesy of Chris in Germany. Thus far, no takers. It would be a shame to leave this on the table. Chris has stepped up to try to make sure that there was sufficient challenges so that I can be gone for a week and not have stuff get turned off and the horn not go dark. Five at 20, 20 at 5, 1 at 100, 2 at 50, 4 at 25, 8 at 12:50, 16 at 6 and a quarter. But we do need to meet that challenge. The PayPal interface, of course, is under the Contribute tab at headonradionetwork.com. Postal Service works, too. The address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, BECKLEYWV 25801. And lines are open. I've filibustered long enough. Oh, God, I could do another hour. I could. But if you want to get involved in the conversation, you are welcome so to do. Area code 304-574-8178 is one of the numbers. The other number, we call it the stress line, is 304-663-4676, 304-663-HORN, and they both work equally well. And with that having been said, we'll take a little break. And by the way, welcome to anyone listening live on the FYI Radio Network. And good evening to Thomas and Nikki. They have reached out and asked, and I was more than tickled to say, yeah, sure, if they could carry this program live in their rotation. So welcome aboard. Welcome to the conversation. If you've never heard the program before, I hope in the last couple of hours you figured out the kind of stuff we do here and what we talk about. And as we move into the conversation radio portion of the program, which usually is not quite so circumscribed, we just had so damn much material this evening, you'll find out what we mean when we say conversation radio. Again, by all means, welcome. Little break, and then back. Your calls, conversation, fun on the horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
I can see it with my eyes closed.
From one of his less appreciated efforts, Warren Zevon from Transverse City and Run Straight Down. It sort of begged to be played there after the shrilly story. This is the Horn Moran Monday, the 21st day of September, 2015. And hey, look, it's Ron up in Canada way. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm among the living. I consider that a bonus.
Well, you should, and we all agree with you entirely. I have to ask, first of all, I'm too damn lazy tonight to break out the piece of crap Lenovo laptop and plug my headset into that, so I'm working on a Mac tonight. If it causes problems, let me know, and I'll sign up.
You are golden so far.
Okay, thank you. I have a story to relate. Well, I have two stories.
Well, tell us both of them.
And, well, being old hillbillies, you know, we got to have stories. Everything is a metaphor. I came home tonight, got a call from my wife had just got off the phone from our son. He and his wife took off in their little Mitsubishi SUV about a week ago and left us with the two golden retrievers. Wonderful dogs.
Oh, I saw photos. And they engendered a really big, from the aforementioned crunchy exterior, soft marshmallow center, Agnes.
Yeah. Warrior Viking princess.
Exactly. Yeah.
So they'd done the Outer Banks driving road trip, done the driving thing through the Outer Banks and down through North Carolina, Savannah, down to Charleston, and they were coming back up through Tennessee. They just visited the George Dickel Distillery. This is a time-honored tradition in our family. I hope you understand, but if we're within 50 miles...
Well, for hillbillies, that's like a religious pilgrimage.
Yeah. And so they're rolling through a little town called Tullamore, Tennessee.
Tullahoma,
right. And they're doing about 45, 50 kilometers, 30 miles an hour. They're passing a hospital.
Yeah, because if they were traveling in metric, they were going to get busted.
Yeah. They got T-boned by some lady screaming out of the parking lot, hit just behind the rear door on the passenger side, knocked them into another car over in an embankment.
God damn!
And they rolled several times and ended up in the front lawn of the hospital. Within 10 seconds, several highly trained and experienced trauma personnel were right there, got them out of the car. And the worst that happened was my daughter-in-law she was in the passenger side. She got a bruise on her forearm and a scrape. The rescue people showed up and went, damn, we were sure we were going to be pulling you out of that. What car is that again? And they're all fine. They got another car. They retrieved all their belongings from the impound yard where the wrecker took the car. The driver drove off.
Naturally.
Got caught by the cops.
They caught her?
Yep. And one of the state police came back and my daughter-in-law says, well, we got her. She's on mesh. And she says, I don't know whether that meant she was on meth or she was on mash. But in any event, they caught her, and she was hauled off to jail immediately. And so they've got a whole bunch of insurance stuff to deal with. And our instructions after we were sure they were all right were, don't sign anything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And her father is a very well-known and respected lawyer in Canada, so I'm sure they'll get good advice. And their insurance company is represented by her brother, who is an insurance broker, so I think they'll be looked after. But traumatic experience.
Well, without a doubt. Now, so they are going to get, I mean, are they going to, well, I'll stay out
this
of it.
This was 4 hours ago. We know nothing except they're now in a rental Jetta. They're now ensconced in Nashville in a hotel and probably having a nice drink. And the adrenaline rush should just stop shortly. And, you know, they'll start the PTSD shakes and, oh, my God, we could have died.
Well, see, and that's the thing. After a wreck like that, I mean, we all kind of know, right, Ron? Because yeah. the miracle that is the human body, and you know how I feel about that word miracle. Well, you know, your body cranks out enough adrenaline to run a race, and so you're kind of okay at first, and then by the next morning, however, everything hurts.
Been there. When I was, I called up her dad and talked to her a couple of hours ago, and he made the interesting comment. He said, I've talked to Lindsay, his daughter, my daughter-in-law, said, and I told her what to expect. And I said, so how did you learn this? He said, well, the first time I rolled a car. So I sense we have some more stories that I'm going to explore at some point in the future.
Oh, God almighty. And, of course, remember, this is an accident taking place in the Deep South. So do please to expect the insurance company. I mean, insurance companies are the insurance company throughout the United States. But it gets particularly nasty down south because you start running into things like, I don't want to go too far off in the weeds. But, for instance, Alabama still has pure contributory negligence. And to the uninitiated, that's like, well, so what? Well, what that means is if the company can argue even 1/10 or 1/100th of 1% of negligence on the part of the driver, there is no recovery.
That's corollary to deep pockets. Yeah.
Somewhere along the way, one, get back to Canada as quickly as possible. I mean,
their way.
Yeah. And get competent medical care. And
will be done. Yeah.
And somewhere along the way, some lawyer in Canada is probably going to need to affiliate herself with some lawyer in Tennessee.
Did I mention that her father was a well-known?
Yes, yes, you did. I'm just trying not to be gender specific or gender biased. By the way, the marvelously coherent Diane in Kansasstan just wrote in and said, Ron's story made my heart stop, but I'm also relieved about the outcome.
It's called the Kellison Horseshoe. We talk about it at various dinners, stuff that happens through the course of a typical year. But I have good news. Did I mention a part where they just visited George Dickel?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. There was a gift for me in the back.
Did it miraculously survive the rollover incident?
It did. Nothing was broken in the entire car. They're now firm believers.
And again, this was a Mitsubishi?
Yeah. The small SUV, not the large one.
Well, they've apparently solved that exploding fuel tank problem they were experiencing back in 1942.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the exploding fuel tank was a design problem. They just couldn't get wings that would fit it. Sorry. Gallows humor.
Yes, I understand.
And the second story tonight. And is drug prices. I think I relayed to you on Skype personal experience. I'm on three different prescription drugs, one for cholesterol and a couple of for what's called old man disease, sort of prostate issues, as in, okay, I got to stop every 20 minutes when we're on a road trip, take a whiz, and that gets irritating after a while, especially as much as I enjoy driving. So had it looked at a few years ago. I got a couple of relatively benign drugs. Between cholesterol and prostate drugs, it works out to about $250 Canadian a month. Now, those are generic drugs.
Yes.
One of the generics is a generic for Lipitor. And my average prescription cost per month after my health care plan and what the province of Ontario kicks in is somewhere under $10 a month. I can live with that.
Yes, absolutely.
And I had also asked you earlier for the experimental drug. Ontario is well known for if there is evidence that it works, but it's still experimental, they'll cover the cost. There's many cases of that happening, and they usually get reported in the press in glowing terms. They've got some patients, cancer patients, or patients with genetic defects that have to require really expensive drugs for obscure diseases that affect like 9 people in the world. There's some patients in Ontario that are getting fully compensated for $250,000 a year just in drugs.
And are they required to sing at least the first verse of the Internationale when they pick up their prescription at the local chemist? Do y'all call him the chemist or the pharmacist?
Pharmacist.
Oh, so we've influenced you that much, have we?
Or they're also called drugstores.
We used to use that word.
Yeah, we used to use that term a lot. And the only other thing I got to comment on is I'm heading off to the sandbox just after very early in October for about 2 weeks. And it might be the toggle for a much longer stay in the sandbox.
So, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. And how do we define much longer?
Oh, I've told them minimum 2-year contract, 3rd-year extension at my option, period. You don't get a vote. So
nice, I think.
That. Yeah, well, I'm looking at it as, you know, not so much, well, I got a whole bunch of reasons to
do
this.
That'll put you one of them will be that will put you in the air long enough to finish the other two Takeshi Kovacs novels.
It will.
Do you have them in hand?
I got one of them. My real objective there is, you know, it, you know, generates enough revenue to make me interesting to the Canadian Revenue Agency, but not excessively so. And I'm doing it mostly because I get to hang around with people 20, 30, and 40 years my junior with PhDs in arcane engineering and computer science specialties.
Like advanced light.
Yeah. And, hey, maybe I'm wrong, but my theory is if you hang around enough with really bright people, they keep you on your toes.
Yes, and sometimes it rubs off.
It does. And the second benefit is it's a really interesting project, which unfortunately I can't describe. And third, it puts me in a place where the Emirates, Dubai in particular, are one of the best travel hubs in the world. You can get to India in 2 hours. I can get to Hong Kong in about 6. I can get back to Europe in 5, and it's all cheap travel.
Kind of the crossroads of the world sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, they might set up a trade route through there or something. What do you think? Think it'd work?
I mean, if we hadn't thought of that 5,000 years ago, this might be a good time to start. is this what is called, and I know nothing about them, of course, is this what we call one of those cost-plus contracts where you eat a lot of filet shrimp or something while you're there?
Yeah, pretty much. Let's put it this way. There are some incentives at my age to get me to take it. So But apparently I have a rapport with many of the folks in the Emirates that's...
You mean you're civilized?
Yeah, well, it was. They came over for a trip a while back, and we gave them a tour of all of our labs and facilities and exposed them to all the sort of advanced sort of work we're doing. And my counterpart over there explained in front of my president and a few other people in the company, "Well, Ron, I don't have to explain this to you. You know how we are." And just moved on to the next subject. I looked up and I caught my president doing this whole Spockian thing with the eyebrow up in the air. And so I couldn't resist. I winked at him. So, you know, it's one of those moments when you show up every day and you don't have a job and you know it before you went there. You can show up, do your job the way it should be done, and do it well. And you're relaxed about it. Some people would view this as a difficult job. I don't, because I've done it for so long. But, geez, when you get a chance to travel and hang around with really intelligent people whose mind doesn't always work the way you think they should, but that's not wrong. It's just different.
Hey, well, exactly. And so you'll be going back and forth, but some of the other smart folks, are they just sort of ensconced there for a while?
No, one of the things I'm going to be doing is renting or leasing a 5 or 6 bedroom house and bringing someone over who's retired, but their job and their wife's job, who's a cook and a caterer, it will be to manage a place, and that'll be my little mini hotel. And I'll bring all my people in and out, and they'll stay for 2 or 3 weeks at a time and fly home. And we'll make sure they're feeling safe and ensconced and well looked after and not being threatened by all the terrorists and headloppers in the UAE. And I'll be somewhere in a 2-bedroom apartment, somewhat removed from that, enjoying my own life. And
nice. Very nice.
Yeah, we'll see. It ain't a sale till the check clears the bank, but it's going to be an interesting little twist. But you know what the neatest twist is?
Do tell.
I can wake up early in the morning.
And listen to the horn.
And listen to the horn.
How early is early?
8 hours difference Eastern time zone.
Okay, so, and then once we go back to standard time, it'll be 7, right?
Things start really early in the morning over there to avoid the heat of the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's not uncommon to have people in the office at 4 a.m. in the morning. So all I got to do is just, you know, I'll be getting up at 2 a.m. and Bob will be on. And I can listen to you wherever I am in the house in the morning.
Okay, so
I'm doing.
So we will we'll establish a code protocol. Periodically, I'll try to remember to say, walk without rhythm, so you don't attract the worms.
Yeah.
Sandworms, dune.
Oh, I was right there.
Tell me about your homeworld, Oozle. you're gonna be the sort of, let's spice it up, Bob. Yeah, you're gonna be the, what was his name? Kynes? You'll be the Kynes. Secretly a Fremen.
I may grow a beard and be regarded as the Amanance Grease. So, amongst all the folks from my company, anyway.
Yeah, but I don't think you'll ever be regarded as the shout-out Mapes.
No. Okay, I'm going to let you go chat to other folks who have more relevant things to say to the issues of the evening. We didn't talk about Morans all night.
Wait a minute. I thought I did two plus hours of Morans.
You did, but you and I didn't talk about them.
Well, that's because you were giving me a reprieve.
The Canadian word for reprieve is respite.
I like that word. That's also a word in English and not just Canadian.
But Americans tend to use reprieve much more. Canadians will use respite in the same circumstances. So it's just another little jewel I'm passing along.
There's a soupçon of difference in between respite and reprieve.
Yeah.
Reprieve is permanent. Respite ain't.
Well, reprieve is permanent unless you violate it, right?
No, that's parole.
Okay. Right. You are a lawyer.
No, I'm not.
Okay. But you know someone who played lawyer on TV, right?
Absolutely. Matlock. and he's never been asked to remove his gold-plated stainless steel truss at the Cumberland County Jail. Oh, by the way, in regard to that story, Ron, a quick update. Got an update a little bit ago from Sister Carol.
Ooh.
Now that this has hit the national wires, the sheriff, the high sheriff.
Sheriff?
Yeah, the high sheriff of Cumberland County, Maine, now says that women will not, in fact, be asked anymore to remove their underwire bras before visiting their clients. And the sheriff now says he wants to actually have an investigation into whether his deputies insisted that female lawyers remove their underwire bras, whether that really happened. Of course it happened. The real question is, the real question is why.
Did they do that to the ones who looked like Kim Davis?
You know, there were no pictures. and by the way, Carol points out a reprieve isn't permanent on Texas death row. Right, because they will they
can get you anytime.
Yeah, they'll change their mind and come kill your ass.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to sign out. I'll keep you in the loop on how things are going in the sandbox, and
I'll see you before then.
You will probably sometime weekend.
That's what I'm rooting for.
Yeah, if I can get my baggies down that way, they'll be coming to you. They're going to be good, Bob.
Oh, I have no doubt. I'm already sort of, well, I've had some practice getting in my happy place courtesy of Brother Deacon Asa.
Yeah.
And I'm perfecting the happy place.
Well, I've done a lot of checking. Apparently there are absolutely no restrictions on me bringing in Havana Club rum, except for size. They're a little bit tetchy on cigars.
Really? Well, I mean, I thought it was just outright verboten.
Well, you know, I'm understating things, you know, but...
magic words, personal use.
Yeah. No. No.
No. No. No.
No. No. No. But I also have 3 Nicaraguan cigars in my golf bag.
They've been known to make good ones, too.
Yeah. And
the one thing that I've been given to understand, and this was told to me by some old cigar aficionado, is that what makes Cuban cigars special is the high amount of lithium in the soil of the tobacco farming areas of Cuba, so that you get a little psychological bonus from smoking a Cuban cigar.
Is that sort of like dopamine? Is that what they give to ADD kids?
No, it's more like an antidepressant.
Before
selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors became all the rage, lithium was used, for depressive problems. But it's also what makes your battery work.
Ah. Well, I have some good representative samples, and I'm going to apply some creative logic to methodology, but I fully expect to arrive down there with some comestibles and consumables that will meet your expectations.
Well, hot diggity, and I'm looking forward to us sitting down to a bowl of gumbo or some such.
Okay. You take care, sir.
All right. You be good, Ron.
Bye.
Bye now. From the far, far frozen wastes of Canada, our buddy Ron. And, of course, all our Canadian members of the Horn Family Commune congregation know that, you know, I jest. It's not frozen yet. And, frankly, there's every bit of chance that by the time y'all are, we will be too. It's called Northern Hemisphere, temperate climate, winter, you know, that kind of thing. Let's run over to the stress line where Jim awaits. Hey, Jim.
What's up, Bob?
What do you know?
Oh, man, I just loved your opening monologue about the how Republicans hate comedy. That's been so apparent for decades.
Courtesy of a an anonymous Republican comedy writer, I've got a couple of trial jokes here. If you'd like to see how they work.
Republican jokes?
Yeah. Well, jokes that Republicans would find funny.
Okay, go ahead.
Let me get it here. Just one second. This is the curse of, you know, being a staff of one.
You know,
okay, so, okay, so, hey, okay, here we go. So did you hear that Hillary was disqualified from Dancing with the Stars? And you say, Jim says, no, I didn't hear Hillary was disqualified. Okay, so we're going to try this again. Did you hear that Hillary was disqualified from Dancing with the Stars?
No, I didn't.
She got pro status after dancing on Vince Foster's grave. Ha 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 ha.
Let me interrupt you right there, because my little rant. I have a theory about that because I think Republicans hate comedy because they suck at it. Remember that Fox News Channel TV show which lasted, I think, 3 weeks on Sunday? And it's weird I remember that because I made a point of watching it one time, and then it was just so... I mean, granted, a lot of comics tend to be liberal or left-leaning. I mean, you got a few exceptions that aren't, you know. I think you might have mentioned him, Rob Snyder, and he got pissed off about some movie or something.
No! He had a bunch of Native American people walk off of his set because he was making really crummy, bad, awful Indian jokes.
Well, the other person I was going to mention was Dennis Miller. He was funny as shit on SNL two and a half decades ago, whenever he was on. But then he tried his hand at, he was hosting a talk show which lasted about 3 days.
Oh, and it was terrible. I think I heard one of the 3 days. It was just awful.
I saw one, the first one I saw, I can't believe this. You know, and I'm kind of going through that withdrawal. You know, the new late night talk show people, and nobody matches Dave Letterman, although I haven't watched him in a long time. I watched his last two shows, and even Colbert, he's still good, he's still great, but I liked him better in his old position, you know. And, I mean, comedy, I allegedly did stand-up comedy for a couple of years. I was the Lee Harvey Oswald stand-up comedy. Alleged assassin was coming. And it's a hard nut to break, and it takes a lot of time to do it. you know, and
You know, as the great John Barrymore once quipped, dying is easy, comedy is hard.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's good on the head, and I have empathy for anybody trying to do empathy, or, I understand. You want to be funny, and then and the first thing I noticed when I did for a couple of years, and first when you start doing it, everybody's like real welcoming, but boy, that window closes slow, and you better be effing funny. And I'm like, I'm the leader of the Oslo stand-up comedy, you know, let's comedy, and dead president humor. It's kind of tough. And I didn't use it all the time, but I would use. But then you try and think writing up stuff that's funny. And then the weirdest thing is when I stopped trying to write comedy, quote unquote, write comedy, my mind kind of opened up. I don't know if that's an existential thing or if it's
there's a difference between being funny and trying to be funny. And if you're trying to be funny, 9 times out of 10, you won't be. Said the guy who isn't funny. But I wanted to mention something to you after you turned us all on to that Steve Allen clip the other night, Jim.
Yeah.
I listened to it. I wish there was video to go with it, but I listened to it, and I came away. It was really, really good for me to take time to listen to. So I want to thank you for it.
Oh, I'm glad you enjoyed it. I just happened to run across it.
And one of the things that leapt out at me, you know, the other guy that I couldn't bring to mind that you were talking about was Bob Dornan. And of course, this thing was recorded in what, 1972?
71.
Yeah, 71. And, of course, Bob Dornan went on to become a notorious ultra-right-wing asshole.
Oh, yeah, that's
what I didn't realize, however, was that as far back as 1971, he was already a notorious ultra-right-wing asshole. And perhaps I could be forgiven because in 1971, you know, I was 8.
Right.
It reinforced something for me, Jim, and that's this. And it's something that it's a theme that I've been kind of trying to develop for a while now, and that is that we collectively tend to make the mistake of thinking everything we see is the awfulest it could awfully ever possibly terribly be. And we impose that upon our times because we weren't around when the most terribly awfulest time ever was taking place earlier. For instance, and this is the one that gets me, your dad starts talking about Vietnam and how the JFK assassination leads to Vietnam.
Exactly.
And how he thinks that JFK's desire to get out of Vietnam was a driving factor in his murder. And
right.
Kind of hard to argue with that. I mean, I'll give that argument a chance. And so there's Bob Dornan, ultra right wing asshole, 1971, who responds by saying, "Well, that's just impossible. And by the way, Jim Garrison, why do you hate our troops?" I mean, it was as if some sort of goddamn time tunnel had opened up, and I could hear people. I could hear it in 2004 when we were saying, "Bring them home, no war in Iraq, for God's sakes, please, no war for oil," and the right wing response, the Republican response, the upstanding Merkin God fearing response was, "Why do you hate the troops?" And in neither instance, in 2003. Or in 1971, when your dad was talking on Steve Allen's show, did he ever say anything about the troops being at fault for anything. These were, after all, conscripts. He was talking about the high mucky-muck brass that wanted them some war in 1963. And not just that little pissant advisor business that we had going on in Vietnam. They had tanks that they wanted to take over there and make go boom, and they had bombs they wanted to drop, and ships they wanted to sail, and Marines they wanted to get butchered, and Green Berets, goddammit. And so I sat there listening to that, and it's like, damn, nothing changes. Yeah, we've got heroic American citizens fighting for their lives in Vietnam. Why do you hate them, Jim Garrison? I'm like, you dick.
Well, going out with Executive Order 263 or whatever, where JFK planned on being out by 65, and there's a plethora of other things, but this reminds me, I don't know why my mind's jumping to this, but I've got to put it out there. That's like whale shit. The strongest whale shit.
Yeah, and I mean, there was other parts. So I got done with that, and through the glories of YouTube, it just rolled me on to a C-SPAN, and this was a trip, a C-SPAN panel discussion at American University in D.C., right after the Oliver Stone's movie was released.
Right.
And on the panel were a lot of people I didn't know, but one guy whose name I did recognize, and that was Fletcher Prouty.
Yeah, well, he's right on. He helped write, I know he had a part in writing the screenplay.
And he was portrayed by Donald Sutherland as Mr. X in that famous bench in D.C. scene.
I told you, that's like one of the pivotal scenes in the movie, to me.
Yeah, and he explained that it didn't exactly happen that way. It was more a matter of correspondence between him and your dad.
Yeah, well, no, it definitely didn't happen that way. That was just to expedite. The movie's 3.5 hours long. You got to keep America's attention. You know, anything over 2 hours.
Right. The movie was just slightly longer than the latest Republican pageant.
Yeah, and a lot more informative and enlightening. And
I got to tell you, from the other end of the spectrum, I mean, he sounded very authoritative, and he sounded like he really, really knew what he was talking about, Fletcher Prouty. So then I went and looked him up. And he had this long and distinguished career. And this is one of those things that makes you just really scratch your head. Because he accepted a fee later on in life, you know, well past all the JFK stuff. He accepted a fee from the Scientology people, Jim, to declare that L. Ron Hubbard really wasn't mentally ill in a naval mental hospital out in California, that he was secretly a member of the CIA.
Repeat that again. He accepted a what?
He accepted a fee. He took money from the Scientologists to declare that L. Ron Hubbard, the father of Scientology, who claimed to be a CIA operative, instead of locked down in a naval mental hospital that I think is in California. It's like a ruin now. It's really creepy. People go there. But he was locked down in a mental hospital in California during his time in the Navy. And instead, he said that he was CIA. And so Fletcher Prouty, hired by the Scientologists, said, yep, he was CIA.
So he was saying he was CIA?
Yeah, L. Ron Hubbard. Because L. Ron Hubbard claimed that some of these revelations came to him because, you know, he was this, you know, super giant genius brain spook.
Right, right. So Fletcher Prouty accepted that he was with the CIA.
No, Fletcher Prouty accepted money to say that L. Ron Hubbard was with the CIA.
He might have been. I saw a movie. I saw a movie over the weekend, which would kind of blow your mind. I'm going to have to try and get it to you. This stuff goes back to early 19th century, almost.
Well, I mean, the problem with the Kennedy assassination, Jim, is that there were people taking numbers. I mean, there were so many members of the corporate and the military and the organized crime elite that they were practically taking numbers to find out who was going to get to bump him off.
I wouldn't disagree with that statement one iota.
Because he having previously been a diehard, hardcore war hawk, as soon as Kennedy got a look at the workings of the guts of the thing, he realized how toxic it was. You know, he comes into office and immediately gets screwed over on the Bay of Pigs. And that's when he starts saying, you know, we need to break the CIA into a million tiny pieces.
Right, and you don't say that about the CIA in 1960, early 1960s. You don't say it now.
Well, no, you don't. And it's not lost on me that before the country even, I think before the country even knew he had said that about the CIA, shortly after his murder, you get Harry Truman in the op-ed page of either the Washington Post or the New York Times saying the CIA must be immediately dismantled.
Yeah, well, I mean, you also have that scene in the movie where basically JFK doesn't even know what the fuck's going on with the CIA and all their little operations, and he's trying to clamp down on it, you know, instead of, you know, Dim Leader, you know, I mean, could you imagine Dim Leader in that position? Full steam ahead. Of course, the only, sarcastically, goodness about that is maybe we would have, we'd all be nuclear smoke by now, but.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's been a wonderful conversation, Jim. I appreciate it, and we will talk soon. Everything going okay out Vegas way?
Yeah, I'm still here, and I'll give you a call if I find any more. So you enjoyed the I thought it was entertaining as hell.
Oh, I absolutely did. And if you get a chance to go find that C-SPAN thing, I recommend you do it. I recommend you watch it with the hockey puck in place, because they've got this one independent journalist who every time they get him to talk or give him a chance to talk says, yeah, well, Jim Garrison was in the pocket of organized crime.
Yeah, that's the
old, I mean, and that was and that was the and that was the smear they ran on him, wasn't it?
Yeah, and goddamn it, in some ways, I wish my dad had been off. And I'm going to say this as a joke, being that I used to be a stand-up comic. I wish he had been, because maybe I'd have a little bit more money than I have right now.
Yeah, because apparently the mob's pretty fucking cheap.
Yeah. Instead of, and I'm doing fine. Thanks a lot, everybody.
All right, you take it easy, Jim. It's good to hear from you.
All right. Well, I appreciate hearing from you, and I appreciate your enlightened view. Pass it on.
All right, will do. Take care. Our buddy Jim out in Nevada stand. So we got to get out of here. It has been a wonderful night. Thank you, one and all. I don't know where the time went. Sorry about the filibobster from hell, but we could still be going, except for, you know, the program ends now. Sorry for the late start. Computers, what are you going to do? Sorry we didn't manage to match Chris's $100 challenge from Germany. That's a little tough, letting one of those blow by. But nonetheless, thank you. We did raise the first $200 of the $400 we needed to raise this evening. It's the other $200 that went wanting. But we'll be back tomorrow, Titanic Tuesday, on the way. And I hope you'll be here. I will. And thanks to the folks at FYI Nation. Hope you're enjoying the program. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy. And in the chat room, thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACAC.org. And, yes, always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all.